Good evening. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse, and you are listening to the Elchar Chronicles. I am your host, Karen Elchar. This program chronicles issues of law and order and our local justice system, the environment, and Indigenous history with special guests that dig deep into topics less talked about here in the Lehigh Valley. The first part of tonight's program is in follow-up to an interview held in June last year, 2023, regarding the passage of Pennsylvania House Resolution 87 to help protect Pennsylvania's critical animal habitats, including wildlife corridors. The content of that resolution would place Pennsylvania in a better position to receive federal funds as the Federal Highway Administration rolls out a new five-year, $350 million competitive grant program to fund wildlife crossings. I'm very pleased to welcome back my guests, the sponsor of House Resolution 87, Pennsylvania State Representative Mary Jo Daly, representing District 148, part of Montgomery County, and Stephanie Wine, clean water and conservation advocate with Penn Environment of Philadelphia. Thank you both for returning and providing an update on this issue.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yes, thank you. It's good to be back with you, Karen.
Stephanie, can you provide a bit of background on wildlife corridors in general?
Yeah, so wildlife corridors, it's a term that encapsulates a set of strategies for reconnecting fragmented wildlife habitat. And what I mean when I say that is, you know, Pennsylvania is blessed to have incredible native species and wonderful wilderness. We have from our elk and our bobcat and our bear to the songbirds that migrate throughout the Commonwealth. But each year, more and more of Pennsylvania's wildlife habitat is crisscrossed by roads, by fracking pipelines, by energy infrastructure, by suburban sprawl. And this fragmented habitat makes it harder for Pennsylvania's wildlife to roam, to mate, to migrate, to forage. And that has a couple different results. On one hand, you have the most obvious, which is crossing deaths. When wildlife habitats are dissected by roads, our wildlife are in danger of being hit by vehicles when they cross. Pennsylvania always tops State Farm Insurance's list of the top states for crossing deaths. We actually had the most claims filed of any state last year. And we were second for the most likely for drivers to hit an animal while they're on the roads. Obviously, this is dangerous for our drivers, but it also obviously kills a lot of animals. Over 500 black bears in 2021 perished on Pennsylvania's roadways, and over 60 of our state's mere 1,400 elk were killed by vehicles. And so when you have wildlife trying to navigate human infrastructure, they run into a lot of problems. And then when habitats are fragmented, it divides up those wildlife populations, and it prevents isolated groups from mating with each other. That results in inbreeding, which over generations is going to result in unhealthier populations that are less resistant to parasites, to diseases. They're more vulnerable to natural disasters and more likely to suffer from genetic diseases. And so when you're thinking about preserving species, you want to not only think about the number of individuals that are out there, but how they're able to mate and interact with each other, how those populations are able to connect. This endangers the long-term health and potentially survival of whole populations of wildlife. For example, when bobcat populations are cut off from one another by freeways, we see more inbreeding, more health problems, and lower survival rates. And this has really widespread implications, not just for Pennsylvania's wildlife, but for the larger landscape that we are a part of. So Pennsylvania is a key part of the Atlantic Flyway. That's the path along which billions of birds from Canada and the northern United States migrate south to the Gulf of Mexico and beyond. And so when Pennsylvania's forests and meadows and wetland habitats get sliced up, when they get destroyed, it doesn't just threaten our resident birds, but the species that migrate through Pennsylvania. And that has impacts for the whole sort of Western Hemisphere. The same is true for the monarch butterfly's multi-generational migration through North America to Mexico. It's this global marvel of evolution, but it's really fragile, and it depends on there being suitable habitat all along the way, including in Pennsylvania. And so as monarch habitat is lost and is made less contiguous, is broken up by our sprawl and by our development, then That whole migration is threatened. Eastern monarch populations have declined by 80% in the last two decades, and that's in part because there isn't suitable habitat along the way. And so that's what we mean when we talk about habitat fragmentation. And corridors, they are a swath of solutions that are able to address and sort of reconnect these pieces. They can look like a lot of things. They can be an overpass or an underpass that crosses a highway that allows wildlife to go above or below. It could be a little stream culvert that helps frogs or fish move from one wetland or one pond to another. It can even be planting native plants along the right of way to help, you know, with monarch migration and making sure that there's milkweed along the stretches of cleared land throughout Pennsylvania. And so there's all these different solutions, both large and small, that help reconnect wildlife habitat as they try to navigate and manage human infrastructure.
So obviously, wildlife corridors play, as you're saying, an extremely vital role, not only in Pennsylvania, but as you're saying, in North America. House Resolution 87 certainly has an impact on moving the issue forward. So, Representative Daley, what's happened so far with the resolution? What activities have been undertaken, et cetera?
Well, House Resolution 87 was the bulk of it. Actually, the whole thing was to have a study performed by the Pennsylvania, but it's a bipartisan, bicameral committee of legislators, but they also have staff that do studies for the legislature. And so we met with some folks late last year who are actually working on the project, and we gave them 18 months to do it, and they were very positive that we should have something back this year, 2024. So, and it's the Pennsylvania Budget and Finance Committee is the name of the group that's doing it. Pretty exciting to know that they are working on it. And I think last time we talked, we said that we would also be getting together as the study was happening. So we're in the process of pulling the group of folks together to continue the conversations about what we can do after the study. So we've been working with a really great group. Stephanie has been part of it and really has been very helpful. I think the fact that we had this study was some impetus for the PennDOT to go after the federal funding, because we talked about that there was federal funding available for these crossings and the corridors. And so it was great to see that PennDOT pursued one of those and didn't wait for the study to be completed. I think that to me was something very, very exciting to see them.
And I would also say this whole issue with wildlife corridors, you've got bipartisan support, which is so very important. Have you increased, I know H.R. 87, there was some dissent, but have you increased your bipartisan support?
I think over the years we did. And I think that a lot of that was the fact that we were just really persistent in continuing to introduce the resolution. This last session, we had a new co-sponsor who was a Republican, and that was State Representative Jason Ortitai. He comes from Western Pennsylvania, so it was really good to have his involvement in it, because he had expressed strong interest in the resolution. And so he was a really terrific partner. The resolution actually passed through two transportation meetings, committee meetings, one last session when it was under a Republican majority, and one the current session with it under Democratic majority. And I feel like the fact that the Democrats had their slim majority really helped in moving it to the floor of the House, where it was not unanimous, but we got a very strong vote. The other group that I want to make sure to mention, besides Penn Environment helping us with getting the word out to other members, was the Theodore Roosevelt Conservation Partnership. Because when they took an interest in it, then we got support from the sportsmen and sportswomen's organizations, which may be leaning a little bit more towards the Republican side, but I know that they are a bipartisan group, and it was really terrific to have their help.
Cool. Congratulations. That's quite a feat.
And on the bipartisanness of it, I mean, we see time and again, as much as environmental issues have unfortunately been seen as sort of more of a left or more of a progressive issue, when it comes to issues of land conservation or species conservation, that is something that typically resonates on both sides of the aisle. And so the idea of protecting Pennsylvania's natural history, its natural resources, its game animals, that's something that we think that all Pennsylvanians can get behind. And when you look at the polling, there's voters left, right, and center who take land conservation quite seriously, even if there might be some disagreement on other environmental issues. And so this really seems like one of those rare opportunities to truly work together and promote something that we all can get behind.
Absolutely. I'm nodding my head, which nobody can see, but I agree completely with Stephanie on that. And that was one of the interests that I had back when I first introduced it. It was very appealing to me as a minority member to work on something that could have bipartisan support. And I think we have it, which is terrific.
So let's talk about this new federal funding. So you have some good news on that note. Who would like to address that?
I can take a bit of that.
Perfect.
With the Biden Bipartisan Infrastructure Act, Pennsylvania, PennDOT applied for a grant of federal money and were one of the 17 states that were awarded funding. So we now have $840,000 to develop a statewide strategic plan to address the challenges and opportunities associated with safe management and stewardship for wildlife crossings. And it's exciting to see that PennDOT is going to be working with the Department of Conservation and Natural Resources and the Game Commission, as well as other organizations, to develop the plan. I'm really excited to see some of this funding come back to Pennsylvania, because our taxpayers are putting money into the infrastructure bill, and it's good to bring it home.
It's especially gratifying as, you know, Penn Environment, we work. So we're a statewide organization. We do a lot of work in Harrisburg on things, you know, like this resolution. We also do work in Washington, D.C. on behalf of Pennsylvanians. And so, you know, to have been part of pushing, of lobbying for a bipartisan infrastructure bill that had funding for wildlife corridors, and working with Pennsylvania's members of Congress to make sure that this program was included in the federal legislation, it's just enormously gratifying to then be able to turn around and help bring some of that money back home to Pennsylvania to do this critical work. And what's so exciting about it is that there are areas where we're already looking at conservation corridors in Pennsylvania. Places like the Allegheny Front and the Kittatinny Ridge. Those are both large-scale functional corridors. Places like the Western Pennsylvania Conservancy and Wildlands Network, the experts who are deep, deep in the data on habitat conservation, have an enormous amount of support, but there isn't the infrastructure with data-driven targeted underpasses, or there's not an interagency plan that supports these priority areas. And so while there's been some energy and attention on protecting these critical habitats for years, there's finally going to be the money and the focus to actually see what are the technical solutions that exist that we know other states are using to make sure that wildlife in these places have the crossings that they need. And so this is a really great sort of first step in bringing some of the solutions that we see in other states, from the Western states to New Jersey, and bringing them home to Pennsylvania.
Is there a time limit for utilization of these funds?
So I'm not really sure about that.
This is a three-year effort that PennDOT is the lead organization on. So this is sort of a starter program. The Federal Highway Administration has, I believe, 5 years to disperse these funds. What a lot of states are doing is getting initial planning grants, and then based on how the planning goes, usually then more funding becomes available with programs like this to then do implementation. It's sort of like, you know, there's positive momentum. So the more you do, the more mm-hmm. you'll get. And so as we can do good planning and demonstrate ourselves as good candidates for additional funding, that will set us up to better leverage these resources in the future. Representative Daley's resolution is one of the things that made us a good candidate to get these initial funds. And then if we can use these initial funds well, then we're going to be better set up, you know, not just because we'll have all that data, but we'll be in a better position to get resources in the future because we've shown that Pennsylvania can and will put in the work.
Well, congratulations to both of you, and especially Representative Daley. That's a phenomenal undertaking, and the amount of support that you've received, well done. And I certainly look forward to future updates on the issue, so I'm going to be bringing both of you back, I am sure, as you progress. I'd like to thank you both for your diligence on the issue, since it's so important to the Commonwealth, and I also appreciate you coming back and returning to speak on this issue. So thank you for joining me again.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having us. Always a pleasure.
My guests have been Pennsylvania State Representative Mary Jo Daley, representing District 148, part of Montgomery County, and Stephanie Wine, clean water and conservation advocate with Penn Environment of Philadelphia, with an update on the recent significant grant award towards forward movement in protecting Pennsylvania's critical animal habitats, including wildlife corridors. We're going to take a short break, so do stay tuned.
Are you interested in inspiring and informing future generations through WDIY's programming? A gift through your will, retirement plan, or estate plan is a wonderful legacy to leave to those that will need a trusted place to hear what's going on in the world. For information about naming WDIY as a beneficiary, please call 610-694-8100 or visit wdiy.org/legacy.
Welcome back. The second segment of tonight's LCHR Chronicles relates to Women's History Month. Since 1995, presidents have issued a series of annual proclamations designating the month of March as Women's History Month to celebrate the contributions women have made to the U.S. and recognize the specific achievements women have made in a variety of fields over the course of American history. Amongst a myriad of anticipated programs, the Pennsylvania Symphonia Orchestra presents a concert on Saturday, March 2nd at 7:30 p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church in Allentown. Not only is it a concert comprised of music by women composers, but includes a 6:30 p.m. pre-concert panel discussion of five successful women in the arts and business who will share their personal and professional stories. I'm very pleased to welcome my guests, Paul Cho, Pennsylvania Symphonia Orchestra Music Director, and Christine Moulton, the orchestra's principal flute. Welcome to both of you, and thank you for joining me.
Thanks so much for having us.
Nice to be here.
So, Paul, let's talk about the thoughts you had in developing this program.
Well, thanks, Karen. Pleasure to be here. You know, one of the staples or pillars of our strategy is community engagement for the Symphonia. Our relevance is really based on our relationships that we have with our community leaders and community populations. And this year was especially exciting to not only work with celebrating in October the Hispanic Heritage Month, where we had the mayor of Allentown speaking and narrating the program of Peter and the Wolf in Spanish. But we had also some community projects that we are very proud of. But the other piece of it in March, of course, is Women's History Month. I guess I wouldn't be incorrect in saying that women have had an important role in my life, particularly my mother, who gave birth to me. So I think I was off on a good path there. Women who I've met over my years of working professionally as a consultant and as a leadership development coach really got me thinking about how our orchestra can be a champion for the talents and the leadership and the contributions that women have made in all aspects of our society. I have been a leadership coach at the Lyndon and Mitch Hart Institute for Women Conductors in Dallas as part of the Dallas Opera. I've interviewed and represented, worked with a lot of female leaders in my role as a consultant at Korn Ferry, placing women in top leadership roles around the country. And so I really have had quite a bit of experience watching and being excited for women who have made such contributions to our society. And the program that I decided on, these three women composers, are exceptional in themselves. And while I have not had had the honor of meeting them because they lived 100 years ago. Their music does live on in a level that is certainly very, very high, and the quality of that music is undisputable. So Fanny Mendelssohn, of course, she didn't write many orchestral pieces, but this overture certainly gives one a lot of imagination to wonder, boy, if she just had written more, how exciting could that have been? The Chaminade goes without saying, what a gorgeous piece that Christine is so elegantly going to play for you. And the Louise Franck Symphony, you know, she was the only composer, a female composer at the Paris Conservatory. And so each of these women had lots of challenges in front of them in a male-dominated time and world for female composers, but yet their music lives on. And it's a real credit to their talents that this music continues to be in the hearts and minds of music lovers all over the place. So it was a really excellent opportunity for the Symphonia to pay tribute to not only these women, but the five women who will join us in a very informal panel discussion about their challenges and opportunities as female leaders in our region. So I'm delighted that this whole thing has been coming together. And topping it all off, we have a wonderful flutist and our principal flute player, Christine, who will just wow you with her virtuosity and musicianship. So it's all coming together so well. And I really hope that a lot of people will choose to come and hear this fabulous evening of music.
Christine, do you have any additional comments regarding the program itself?
I'm particularly attached to the concertino by Cécile Chaminade, and I'm delighted that Paul asked me to be a part of this concert and play it. What we call the Chaminade, rather than the concertino, the piece we refer to as her name, the Chaminade is known for many flutists. It's a rite of passage. And that doesn't diminish the gem that it is. It's a beautifully, intelligently crafted piece of music that's really a showstopper. She really understood the instrument when she wrote this piece for the flute. I'm delighted to be a part of the celebration.
Shall we talk a little bit about the pre-concert presentation, the discussion? Paul, you do have a number of very special guests, so could you expound on that?
As much as this is a music concert and we are an orchestra, I'm also well aware that these women have contributed in a variety of ways to in their professions, in their personal lives, and I'm especially delighted that they'll have a chance to share sort of their successes and their stories about their lives, and hopefully will be an inspiration to young women in the audience and beyond. I've asked these five women to see if they had the time to participate, and they were all so excited to be a part of the conversation. They all come from slightly different backgrounds, but music has intersected their life in significant ways as well, which I think is particularly interesting because they'll be able to relate to these three women composers from their aesthetic sensibilities. But I believe that differences in their paths will also be very interesting to hear their stories. So we have five women, Rebecca Marola, who is actually a former student of mine at Lehigh and a flutist herself. So she was very excited to come be a part of this. She was a former executive at Lutron as an engineer, traveled the world doing a lot of important things for Lutron. But recently, she decided to step back into an entrepreneurial role. And she owns a kitchen design store out of Quakertown. But she's still a real fan of music and still, she has two kids now and they are loving music. And she was excited about this program mostly because she loves Cécile Chaminade's concertino. We have Lourdes Starr, the CEO of Astral Artists, which is a nonprofit based in Philadelphia that I have been on the board of. It is an organization that champions young musicians and helps them navigate the world of music and helps them be successful. She's a wonderful person, somebody who is very capable, and somebody I've enjoyed working with as part of Astral Artists. So I'm thrilled that she is coming up from Philadelphia to be a part of this. We have Sunmin Lee, who's a former Lehigh faculty who was in charge of Choral Union while Professor Stephen Sammets was on sabbatical. She is currently an active choral conductor and musician who lives in New Jersey, and I'm delighted just to have her be a part of the panel, bring some diversity as well. Lila Breithaupt is the executive director of the Bach Festival in Bethlehem. Obviously a very successful leader, somebody who's been in that position not so long and shares my enthusiasm for community engagement. And we're hoping that we can continue to work together as well. She hails from Indianapolis and, you know, was very excited to talk with us about kinds of some of the things that we're up to. So she will be on the panel. And the last person is Ann Lewis, who is the division director for the Fine Performing Arts at DeSales University. I've worked with Ann a lot as a conductor in their theater program, Shakespeare program, Shakespeare Festival as well. She's a brilliant person, very committed to young women and students overall, and really will be a positive addition to the group. So you can see that there's some diversity in this group in terms of their backgrounds, their interests. And I think you'll find an equal amount of diversity in their experiences that will tell a compelling story. I will be facilitating the conversations, asking them questions, asking them to share a bit about some of the challenges and opportunities they've had in their very impressive careers. And I think it'll be just a very inspiring conversation. And I certainly encourage young women and audience members alike just to hear what they have to say. I think it's important.
So can we talk a little bit about the performance pieces? So we'll let Christine talk about the Chaminade. Do you quickly want to talk about the other two selections?
I'm not sure which aspect to talk about. One of the joys of working on this piece is seeing the wisdom of the choices that she made. There's simple motives, like the very opening, these four descending passage, four notes. That's such a simple opening. She writes notes above and below and weaves it through the piece. And you don't even know until you look and go, oh, there's that motive again. And the piece was written for what was the contest piece at the Paris Conservatory. Each year, the flutists had to reach a certain level of expertise and musicianship. And there was always a piece commissioned. And the commission was to include technical challenges and lyrical challenges. And every piece that was commissioned throughout the years of this contest, which for us in this country is like a jury. Musicians in music programs do a jury at the end of the semester. So it's similar to that, only it was public at the Paris Conservatory. The Paris Conservatory recognized Chaminade's prowess as a composer and asked her to write the piece. So it's got this wonderful lyricism, technical challenges, as I said before, a real wonderful knowledge of the instrument. She wrote very well for the instrument and shows it off. So it gives the flutist a chance to show off. And she wrote it to support the excitement of that. And I think it's especially wonderful that Paris Conservatory recognized, because all the composers that they were commissioning, or both before and after, were men. So she's the one woman who got this deserved attention. But when she was growing up, she was encouraged by Bizet to go to the Paris Conservatory. And her father, another example, her father said that it wasn't proper for a woman of her class to be a student at the Paris Conservatory. She could study privately with professors there, but she couldn't go to school. So her career was also discouraged. But she rose above that.
Well, this has been an excellent discussion. My guests have been Paul Cho, music director of the Pennsylvania Symphonia Orchestra, and Christine Moulton, the orchestra's principal flute, discussing the upcoming presentation in recognition of Women's History Month. The program will be held on Saturday, March 2nd, at the First Presbyterian Church, 3231 West Tillman Street in Allentown, and begins with a 6:30 p.m. pre-concert panel discussion comprised of successful women in business and the arts. The concert will be held thereafter at 7:30 p.m. For more information, phone 610-434-7811 or go online to pasymphonia.org. My sincere thanks to both of you for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
This is Karen Elchar. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in to WDIY. Tune in next Thursday for more Lehigh Valley Discourse, and we'll see you next time on the Elchar Chronicles.